Tobias Carlyle is the founder and principal of Acquires Funds. For regulatory reasons, we will not discuss any of the Acquires Funds on this podcast. All opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Acquires Funds or affiliates. For more information, visit acquiresfunds.com.
This week's Acquirers podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Validia. Validia runs quantitative stock selection models using strategies based on academic papers and books with long-term track records of success. You may recognize Validia since two of its founders, Jack Forehand and Justin Carboneau, both good friends of mine, have appeared as guests on the podcast. With value stocks showing signs of turning around, Validia offers more than 10 systematic value models backed by long-term research, including strategies based on Joseph Piotrowski's F-score, Ben Graham's defensive investor from The Intelligent Investor, Joel Greenblatt's magic formula, the value composite from Jim O'Shaughnessy's What Works on Wall Street, and many others. Investors can access these strategies through concentrated 10 and 20 stock model portfolios or see how stocks rank based on each model's specific investment criteria. Through the end of March, Validia is offering 33% off an annual subscription to both its standard and professional product to listeners of the Acquirers podcast. To find out more about Validia or to take a free trial, you can go to validia.com/Toby. Again, that's validia.com/Toby. What's up, amigos?
We're live.
It is.
I'm your host, the boy Carlyle,
on the Arguable Investors podcast. Where are we at?
Wait,
where am I?
Joined by Bill Belichick and Jack Taylor.
That's right.
Off to a hot start.
What's happening, fellas? Folks? What a wild market. So we've had. Like a little bit of the tech has looked a little bit soft, but wow, it's back big and strong today. Tesla's up 18% on the day. Markets at like close to all time highs. ARK's having a monster day, so business as usual.
Tesla's up 18%.
More, I think it was up like 19 last time.
Yeah. Oh my!
Is it infrastructure week and nobody told me? What do we?
That's like $100 billion of market cap, no?
That's real money.
That used to be before the stimmy.
Yeah. Is that what's causing it, do you think? People got their stimmy checks yet?
No, I don't think so. I don't know, man. Seems like there's more buyers than sellers today.
More buyers than sellers, that'll do it.
That's the science.
This is value after hours. I'm joined as always by Jake Taylor and Bill Belichick Brewster. What's happening, fellas? What are we going to talk about today?
Billy, what do you got?
I was going to talk a little bit about portfolio construction. Think it might be a decent topic.
All right. I kind of took the last couple weeks off, you know, mailing in a little bit of the veggie segments, just doing recent letters that I liked. But I'm back and I've done some homework and we're going to be talking about bonsai trees and what they mean for business and investing.
Nice.
Might be good.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about just my utter confusion about what's going on in the market at the moment. Right after this. Do you want to... Jake, do you want to take it away? You got some good veggies there.
All right, yeah, we can start off there.
The crowd wants sperm whale facts, mate. Sperm whale facts is where it's at.
We did that already. Go back and re-listen to that. I don't redo topics.
Gotta give people give the crowd what they want.
All right, so shout out to John Chu, who's a listener who sent me a really nice write-up on this topic, and I'm basically just going to steal all of his ideas and pretend that they're my own. So thanks, John. Nice. I appreciate it.
It's called cloning in value investing circles.
Yeah, exactly. Hard cloning here. So, you know, bonsai, you know, it's funny to me, like, what analogies people use, because it sort of, it'll betray your mindset and sort of how you think about things. And there's often a kind of a hunter mentality in the investment world, like, I'm gonna land this whale. Buffett's bringing out the elephant gun, right? Like, there's this a lot of hunter analogies, a lot of hunter metaphors, and I think it's probably maybe a disservice actually to go that route. I think I think the bonsai is a little bit more of an interesting analogy and mindset to use. And you know, gardening in a way or farming is somewhat similar in some of those analogies. But anyway, I never knew this, but like I thought bonsai was a type of tree, like a species or something. Turns out it's not. It's actually more of an aesthetic and an approach to managing the growth of a tree, and it can be any kind of tree. So there's cedar bonsai. There's I don't know.
You can bonsai probably anything.
Apparently, you can bonsai.
Can you bonsai me, Fokker?
Yeah. I could. So it's an art form that is that the aim of it is to express this very efficient beauty that brings out the tree, and what you're really going for is to create a miniaturized version of what a full-grown tree would look like. So but what's interesting is like you have to also keep this thing alive while you're doing it, so there's a lot of trade-offs as far as you know, design aesthetic versus actually keeping it alive. So another thing that's very interesting about it is that like this is it'll be a 50-year project to do one of those full, like really nice looking bonsai trees. Like this is almost it's a life's work to create one of these. So they start out, and I thought what would be fun to do it this way would be I'm going to go through sort of the higher points of bonsai and the process of it, and then maybe we can tackle together some of the forced analogies after that.
I like it. I like where this is going.
More of a team effort, yeah. So the first thing that they've to figure out which seed to start your seedling is apparently you pour hot water over a bunch of seeds, and the ones that float, you want to throw those away because apparently they don't germinate. And so you take the ones that sink. I have no idea what the physics is behind that, why the sink ones, I'm sure our crack team of researchers in the around the world will tell us the answer eventually. So once you pick out the seeds, you plant them, and you have to keep it moist for a really long time. Like, and after about a year, you have this little sapling that's like, you know, 3 or 4 inches big. And I mean, and you've done almost nothing except for just keep some fertilizer and moisture. And really what you're trying to do is encourage the roots to grow, because apparently the roots will only go as far as the moisture is. So if you're only watering kind of the top and it never gets lower, the roots will not dig deep enough into your pot to really like create a strong anchor for it. All right. Then next comes this phase where you do a lot of thickening of the trunk, and you're letting it grow more and more until that sapling becomes a, you know, much more of sort of a branch that's growing. And in order to do that, you have to allow the branches that come off of it to flower.
I just want to say real quick,
I know there's so many double entendres.
I am not mature enough to handle this conversation. I just want to throw that out there that I have tried not to laugh, and between moisture and branches and thickening things, I don't have it in me. I apologize that I am straight back to second grade. I can't help myself right now. Okay, continue.
I knew I was teeing it up for you when I was doing this. So there's a long planning process that goes into the things that you do now today, and even the things that you do 2 years from now will dictate what you'll be able to do with the tree 5 years from now. And a lot of it has to do with, like, they use these wires to bend the tree and have it grow in a certain direction. So I don't know if you've seen, like, a lot of the bonsais kind of have these, like, you know, zigzaggy growth patterns. And that's not a normal thing for a tree. Like, it wants to just kind of get height as quickly as it can. And so they'll use wire to kind of bend it, and it'll grow for a year to the left. And then they'll use wire to make it, like, grow in the other direction. And so it's like, but you're crafting it how you want to do it. But you have to think about, like, okay, well, that's going to be the top of it in 10 years or 50 years. What do I need to do today to allow myself the optionality down the line? And then there's a whole thing around, like, branch management, because, like, there's a lot of temptation to do something today and, like, chop off the branch and make it look good. But you will, when you're doing that, you can actually, like, risk losing the tree, because you know, it's getting a lot of the, you know, like the photosynthesis is happening with the leaves that are there, or the pine needles. so there's this pressure that you want to do something today immediately. And really for every, like, there's a time for everything in this, and your overreaction can end up killing your tree. And so you have to be very careful about taking actions when it's the appropriate time to do it and being very patient with it. And you kind of have to work in harmony with the tree. So the big decisions are really risky, but like the small maintenance is like continuous. Like you have to water and fertilize it all the time. And so, and then last thing we'll say is that, you know, you can actually let a branch grow for a lot longer than you would think. And then you trim it off and you can start a new tree with that branch. Okay, so we've just laid out probably 10 different sort of actions, mental models, ideas that might be interesting to jump into now, the business or investing tortured analogies. I don't know, what's the first thing that jumps out at you guys?
Let me just, before we do that, can I just ask, what stops them from getting really big? How do you keep them small? Is it because they're in a small pot?
I think it's in a pot, yeah, and I mean, there's only so much, I think, that can be built when you have a small amount of foliage to absorb resources, nutrients. So I think that limits like why it can't grow to be too big. And the other thing too is like there's a lot of maintenance in like shaving down the roots, and like one for aesthetic reasons, and two, I think, to maybe limit some of the, like how big it gets.
Do they grow miniature leaves? Is that what happens?
I mean, I think leaves always look the same when they first start out, right? Okay. And then they just, the branch gets bigger. Everything sort of just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah, it's
sort of a fractalness to it, right?
I think it's a good analogy. And as you were saying, I was like, this is a good analogy that I need to steal for something at some stage. But keeping it, like the fact that it takes 50 years and the fact that you have to like nurture it and prune it every day and decisions impacting down the line. Yeah, I thought it was I think it's a very useful analogy. It makes me want to go and get a bonsai, actually. It makes me want to grow a bonsai.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of responsibility, though. I'm not sure. That's a big commitment.
It is a big commitment.
How about you, Bill? Anything jump out to you that other than a bunch of double entendres that were distracting?
Yeah, when I was mature enough to think about it, I guess, you know, I've been struggling to hold on to Disney here a little bit, and I trimmed it a little bit today. Not a big trim, but a little trim. And you know, the idea of like letting, like, not touching something too much and letting it grow. That said, it's grown a lot, so I'm not sure. It reminded me a lot of Never Sell, what you were saying, actually. All that I was thinking about was Never Sell.
Boy, we hear what we want to hear, don't we?
Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
No, there is something to that, though, like a kind of letting your winners run in a way, where letting the tree be a little bushy for the sake of the tree, longer than maybe you would think, so that then you can trim it to be more aesthetically pleasing later. I think that's a big part of it. Another thing I thought was interesting was
Toby, what did you hear there, sir? Do you have a thought?
We're going to have to move on to another topic soon.
This has been a winner. I just want to say this is one of my favorite veggie segments yet.
All right. That's good. So to go back to the big decisions being rare, and a lot of it is just sort of the blocking and tackling of water and fertilizing. I'm reminded of your terrific conversation that you had with Ian that dropped last week. And he's something that struck me that I thought was interesting and that probably goes against the majority of how people practice this. He said he spends 80% of his time researching and learning more about the things he already owns. And 20% of the time on looking for new things. And the argument was that, like, if it's not in the portfolio, it can't kill you. Right. I find that to be very interesting. And to me, like, sort of keeping up and being a good owner of these businesses is the watering and fertilizing that you need to do all the time. And occasionally there's big action called for. I thought that was a nice tie-in.
I had another chat to Chris Bloomstrand, and the same thought occurred to me while I was talking to him about Berkshire. Like, he's been in Berkshire since 2001, I think he said. I hope I haven't. Like, it might be 1998, but that's coming up soon. But he has such an intimate knowledge of Berkshire and he said he's bought it regularly over the years because it's one of those stocks that has, for the last sort of decade, it's traded pretty cheap. And as a result, he's sort of quite familiar with, you know, when something happens, he understands it really well, whereas the market might not. So he's able to buy some or sell some or do whatever is appropriate in the moment. And I did think that would be if you have a handful of bonsai trees that you just keep your eye on, that makes life pretty simple, right?
Yeah, what a huge advantage, right? If you have a very solid scale of what to weigh something, and you don't have to, like, he's sleeping like a baby when it comes to Berkshire, right? Like, he understands exactly the price to value relationship. Probably makes the game a hell of a lot easier if you have a few of those.
Yeah, which is why he was able to buy it so aggressively last year, when it got super cheap around this time last year. I like the analogy because I like the idea of, we talk about this a little bit, but like not just being in or out of something, scaling in and scaling out, iterating as you're kind of in it. If you have a handful of things that you know really well, you can do that easily, right? You scale in, scale out. Never really want to get out of them because it's hard to find really good businesses like that. If it's a 50-year business is what I'm talking about. Not everything's a 50-year business, but for 50-year businesses.
Yeah. So another, Monish had a talk that he gave recently to Peking University, and he's talking about spawners, and that's like his new thing that he's really into. And it's the idea of these companies that grow other businesses inside of them and spin them off or not, and they keep them internal. But this idea of letting a branch really grow for a while and then cutting it off and starting a new tree, I find to be interesting. And like allowing the tree to be aesthetically not pleasing for a long period of time in order to have that branch later be available to cut off, and the patience required from the business person who's trying to run a spawner kind of strategy, I find to be an interesting idea.
Did you say IAC? What's the thesis for like focusing on things that spin stuff off a lot rather than just keeping it in house? Why would that be an advantage over just holding it?
Well, you get focused management teams. Right, like IAC, and one of the reasons that they want to spin Vimeo is like Vimeo is an asset that probably warrants, given where things are trading, a little bit more like specific attention, and you can start to like compensate your employees based on that particular stock as opposed to the conglomerate stock, and it just sort of aligns more incentives. And I do think that, like, when you're talking about something that's trading certainly not depressed multiples, I hope is not a controversial thing to say. You might want to argue that, like, you want to recruit the best possible talent to that organization and allow them to be judged on their own merit and not sort of within what goes on at Angie or whatever like that. I think that's what they would say.
Can you compensate them out of the flows from the business rather than, although we've lost Bill, rather than the performance of the stock?
Sure. Yeah, you can take,
that's cash. Very unpopular. That's not a popular thing to do, but some businesses do that.
Yeah, I mean, rising markets, nobody wants cash. They want stock, right?
You can buy it. It's freely traded. Yeah.
Well, exactly. I think that is actually a pretty compelling argument for sometimes some of these stock option plans are maybe a little misguided.
I'd like to point out that it took, 19 minutes for my computer to update.
That's
crazy.
The camera has fixed your hair, Tim. It's amazing.
Hey, there we go. Can you still see my boogers?
Always. All right, so we have anything left on this carcass to pick off before we move on?
I think we've bound it in wire and forced it into an unusual shape. It's one we need to let go for a little while now.
I'm not a very good bonsai tree owner. I tinker too much to mess with bonsai trees. I'd kill them all.
In the 80s, they always had like the executive would like give a little spray. That's all you got to do. Just give a little spray and then get those little scissors out and cut off a leaf or something.
Yeah.
I bet I'd kill it.
I kind of want to have a go at it. It sounds like fun. You want to do your topic, Bill, so I can mix?
I guess it kind of actually dovetails with Jake's. Like,
it always does.
I don't know about always, but today, yeah. I guess that, like, I was talking to somebody on the Twitter machine about the cigarette stocks, and it has been, I haven't really noticed the drawdown like some other people have, despite the fact that I have some names that are sort of like in the drawdown. For instance, IAC has gotten whacked, and Naked got a little bit whacked, and there's some other things, right? But then I also, like, in March, bought TGS Nopec, which has energy exposure. Like, these cigarette companies have held up some of the midstream.
Yeah, what about the pipelines? What do they do?
They've been okay. So I think that's, like, one of those. It's been sort of a cool time to watch the portfolio work like it's supposed to. I do think that when one thing that I'm probably reasonably good at is I really do try to think through, are these bets correlated and what are the actual exposures that I'm taking? And I think that, that's not to say, like, if you're a NASDAQ investor, like, go out and do your thing. But I do think that your personality type has to be such that you're okay with some of these bigger drawdowns and some of the more volatility.
If you've been winning consistently, then you're not diversified. Like, and don't kid yourself.
Well, yeah, and like, honestly, a lot of those guys, they're like, all right, whatever, this is a drawdown. Like, this is what happens. We're up 4x, now we're down 20%, and you want to call us a loser? Like, fine. But, you know, and I totally get that, right? You're still up, what, 3.2x. So, it's just, I think that for me, one, I don't have the knowledge base to play around in that hypergrowth space. And two, I sort of have enjoyed having a portfolio that I've watched absorb blows on one side by catching a bid on the other. And then, today has been, I've underperformed the NASDAQ, but I'm up slightly more than the S&P. It's like the portfolio is doing what it's supposed to do. So it's been kind of a cool time to have it tested and see how it's performed. So I would just, sort of encourage people to think through, like, what does Dalio say, 15 truly non-correlated bets? Some of these, like TransDigm and Disney, are clearly correlated, but they're, a lot of my bets are not. So I don't know how many are non-correlated, though, because it seems like when everything sells off, it all goes to one anyway, but
it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, can you even find 15 things that aren't correlated on planet Earth in the finance world?
Well, this is the Bitcoin argument, man.
All right, there's one. What else you got?
Then you got equities.
You could get some vol. Okay. You can get
bond. Oh, wait, those are correlated.
Commodities.
What else you got?
Vol commodities.
Yeah.
But that would mean, you got to buy stuff that's not working, and that sucks. You got to go and buy... You got to buy commodities. Commodities are ripping now, but they weren't for a long time. Vol's been getting, you know, vol's up and down, I guess that's what it does. But it's it has been, you know,
it's in the name.
It's been a rough, that's right. But it's been a rough ride. I mean, vol guys were pretty suicidal before March last year, or long vol guys anyway. I think the short vol guys were, you know, Thanksgiving Day turkeys. But you know, they're feeling pretty good, I guess. I guess that shows that it works. The diversification works. Real estate, yeah. VSG's got some suggestions here. Gold, treasuries, real estate, stocks, farmland.
I mean, I was being a little glib, but still, I mean, it is hard to... I mean, it's hard to untangle how much of what you're doing is just taking interest rate bets and duration bets more than almost anything else.
Yeah, there's also the argument to be made. You know, Dalio's talking at a macro level. You know, when you're putting together a stock portfolio is always going to be pretty correlated. But then you've also got the thing, like, sectors and industries get cheap together. Everything gets cheap at the same time. And you can just pick the one out of the sector or the industry, but there's a possibility that you miss it.
Yeah.
And a little bit more exposure to it. You know, you get a little bit more concentrated in undervalued sectors or industries. Although that hasn't worked for a decade or so.
Yeah, that's sucker's bet there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me that big tech is cheapish here, or at least presents decent value. I would be rotating.
That kind of,
and I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of smart people chirping about Adobe, and I can kind of see that. This is going to sound like crazy to people, and I apologize for offending a bunch of value people, but I can even sort of see Tyler here. And that trades at a nosebleed valuation, but it's an incredible business. And like, they're about to do an acquisition. They funded it with debt. They're not issuing equity. Like, I don't know. I could see it working. I would be long the ineptitude of government. I don't think that that's a really hard thing to be long. And if that trades at a premium multiple, I think it probably deserves to.
What's that, like Bitcoin, or is that Tyler?
I was going to say.
No, it's Tyler. They just like, they do a lot of the payment stuff for governments. And I was reading Morningstar writing about him. I mean, I haven't done like deep work, but a lot of the government systems are so antiquated that the people that have been employed to keep them up are now retired, and the skill set is not they're not replacing the skill set. So you do own like a major, major arms dealer of software to government. And that, I mean, like, that seems to me to be a decent place to play. So if it trades at a massive multiple, I get it. You're not buying some energy.
You can get that same thing at a lower multiple, and it's your boy running it.
It's not even close. Those guys don't have a clue what they're doing in that space relative to Tyler. They just don't, and they admit it. And if they did, they'd be growing like a weed. Now, can they land that Australian deal? Maybe, yeah. But like, you're telling me the Daily Journal is going to recruit talent against Tyler? Like, that's really the bet? You want to come work for us in tech? What's the quality of technician or engineer that's going to go work at Daily Journal? Like, at some point, it just doesn't pass the smell test to me.
Yeah, I guess it's always a matter of how much are you paying to make that bet as well.
Yeah, but you can't just buy shit and expect it to turn into a flower. Like, you got to have the players in place, and you can't be like, well, I paid a shit multiple, so maybe if I get a flower out of, you know, conjuring it in my mind because I worship Munger, like, that's crazy. Munger would tell you that's a terrible bet. He even said I wouldn't buy the stock here. That's his words, not mine. It's a bunch of, like, I'm not trying to be rude, but like, they are older men that are, their competence is running a newspaper business that served the legal industry in runoff, and people are making a software bet on it. I mean, that's fine if you want to play that game, but if it doesn't work out, like, don't act like it wasn't kind of telestrated, like, or I don't know, whatever. It's obvious. Kind of obvious. Yeah. So if the bet is cheap, yeah, you know, some shitty ass horse wins a race every once in a while and you get paid out. But how often does that happen?
You don't have to back the one that's 100-1. You can back the third or fourth horse at better odds.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm not saying that you have to play in that space. I'm just saying, like, I don't think Daily Journal objectively has a real shot to win in that space.
I don't know at all well enough. I'm just wondering if it has to win for it to be a worthwhile bet.
I mean, I don't think that you can perpetually promise that a contract is coming that never comes. That doesn't sound like winning to me. It's been, what, 3 years I've heard about this Australian deal?
Well, the Aussies
are
slow.
So, like, great, now you implement it, and then, like, how do you grow it? How does it expand? Where are you going to go into your next adjacency? Meanwhile, Tyler is an acquisition machine that Charlie did kind of talk shit about a couple years ago. And here, let's see what their revenues have done since Charlie has said, I wish all of our competitors were them. Let's pull it up. You guys can take the convo from here.
Well, let me.
I'm pretty sure they grow at like 17% a year.
Let me do my topic. There's been quite a big move in the market that tech's come off a little bit. Tech's come off quite materially. It's probably technically
correction.
Correction? Is that
10%?
Is that all it is?
That's, I don't know.
I would have thought more
people
than a correction.
People seem to say that's a correction. Correction's
10%, right? What's 20%? That's a crash. Bear. That's a bear market. Okay. So we've gone through correction, but we're not in a bear for tech.
I guess. I don't know. Is that right?
Certain of these names have gotten shellacked, man.
Some of them have done a lot, yeah.
But, yeah, and if you really think about like Adobe, I mean that's sold off I think like 20% or so since I think it's been over 9 months. So if you also include the business's growth, I mean that's down 25-30%.
There are big moves going on under the surface of the market. Like the market at the moment is basically at all-time highs. It fell off and then it's had a couple of days rally, so it's back to all-time highs. And then tech is up, you know, ARK and Tesla are up a lot today. Up, you know, I don't know about ARK, but Tesla's up close to 20% on the day, which is a big move, particularly in a stock that big. But then there's been a lot of talk in the momentum strategies are going to have their biggest turnover in a very long period of time, where they're now going to start picking up some of the fins and some of the energy. And so I just wonder what that, you know, all of this turmoil under the surface, it's sort of not really being reflected in the market at all. And I just wonder what that's sort of part of my confusion. I don't know. When I look at what's been working over the last sort of probably since November, it's been small, cheap junk is from what I can see, and that sort of helps some of the stuff that I do and hurts some of the stuff that I do. It's not, I wouldn't say that value has started ripping just yet.
How does that work in the with those momentum strategies? And I've heard this argument that's going to turn over soon, but is that like, isn't there somebody who does the momentum on a slightly shorter time scale that tries to front run the other person, and you just get this sort of like Red Queen effect?
There are lots of implementations of it. It depends on what they could be looking back 12 months or 9 months or 6 months or 3 months or some blend of that and turning over portions of the stock. They could be doing it on an absolute basis, looking at what's up the most. They could be doing it on a relative, you know, absolute basis, looking back over a fixed period of time, relative basis. There are so many different implementations of it. It's like value. There's so many different implementations. You can't really use it as a monolith. You have to kind of look at the detail. But it does seem that the stocks that are up the most are the ones that are going to be going in, which means that they get continued buying for a little bit longer at least. I think it's a funny market because I've heard some talk about like the reopening trade, but when I look at the stocks that are in the reopening trade, airlines and cruise lines and things like that, like their stock prices might not have fully recovered, but they've all taken on so much debt that the EVs are way, way up. Enterprise values are way, way up. And then the load factors are, you know, still in the toilet. And I don't see how, if you've got an EV that's higher than it was in March last year, or, you know, pre the sell-off, and your load factors way down, it's going to take probably years to recover. I don't see how they can be trading where they are. It just makes no sense to me.
You got to look out really far, probably, to get comfortable. Because not only do you need the economics to return to the business, the operational leverage, but you also need to pay off all the people you put in front of you in line to get paid as these debt holders. You have to do something with them as well. So you're looking through multiple levels of cash flow changes to get to where you get paid as the owner of the business.
You better hope another pandemic doesn't come.
Well, I don't. Yeah. I don't know if people have put up with the lockdowns again, but yeah. It was just, you know, it was a fact of life. Back in, you can read Casanova's autobiography. He talks about, you know, when you walked from one Italian city to, when you went from one Italian city to another, you were in quarantine. And he very sneakily figured out how to get around it. And he told the bloke who was in charge of quarantine. And he said, that's impossible. And then he showed him how he did it. So quarantine is like, that is something that has been with us for a very long period of time. Maybe we just go back to this world where there's quarantine when you fly somewhere or you travel somewhere. That's a horrible thought. But that's kind of what we're in at the moment. And I don't see anybody planning to take that off anytime soon.
That would suck.
I mean... I kind of hope it all reopens, but even if it all reopens and everything goes back to normal, I still think that all of those kind of junky names are way, way too expensive.
Jesus.
Sorry. I don't know why music just started. No, I don't understand any of these things. I do kick myself for not buying Spirit. Not the airline, but the fucking... fuselage maker. That was stupid of me. I even wrote it up when it was $20 and now it's 48. Good move, Brewster. Great. Fantastic. Anyway, that's somewhat revisionist history. But like I think they're gonna have to spend a fair amount on like these new they're going to make their fleets younger. That's like not a news story if you follow the airlines. So you got some CapEx coming, or at least increase lease costs, or lease costs. And if you don't have the increases in the lease costs, they're going to have longer tenures on the leases. Like, you're not getting something for nothing, and you got more debt. It's a consolidated industry, but I'm not
it's
convinced.
What's not
that,
to like.
Yeah. I don't. Good point. So.
All this period very confusing because I can see that there's some run in some of the in the cheaper value names, and tech seems to have been a little bit softer. It's just it's a weird kind of rotation. It's like there's no real reason why it's happened. It's just sort of started happening, and it's been in the press the last few weeks. I don't know how sustainable it is. It hasn't sustained at any other time.
What, the tech sell-off?
No, I care less about the tech sell-off, more about the value rally.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I bet. I don't see why value wouldn't do okay with the reopening trade. I could see
How many head fakes have you had now, Toby, in the last 10 years?
I ran out of fingers, so I can't count them. But yeah, it's that kind of number.
This time for sure.
Just real quick to close the loop on the Tyler thing versus Daily Journal. And I'm not trying to take shots at Charlie. I love that guy. And Berkshire is a huge position for me. So I bet with them. But since 2014 to 2020, their gross profit is 2.33x. So it's gone from 233 million to 543 million. Daily Journal has gone from 37 million to 45 million, which is what? I've got 1.2x, but that doesn't feel... Yeah, I guess it's little light. That's a little light. But anyway, you know, it's like... I think that there's a lot of danger listening to your heroes and just hearing them say something and being like, well, they're right because they're my hero. Because I think the writing has been on the wall for Daily Journal for a while, and I don't think that it is performed. And I have seen a presentation where a guy did really, really good work. And if he's right, he deserves to be right for the right reasons. But... I'm not going to be right with them. It's just not a horse I bet on. Plus, a lot of it's marketable securities. What happens when Charlie dies? Then you get some random person running a equity portfolio? Like, no thank you. Or you could never sell Wells. I mean, if that's the bet you want to make, you could just go buy Wells. I don't know.
Big part of it's BYD right now also, which is
running
a little hot probably, or was at least.
Which Charlie was like, I don't even know how to hold this, but I'm not going to sell it, which, you know, I totally get, right? But, like, I like when Charlie gives an answer that I feel like I could give, right? Like, how do you hold BYD here? Well, I think they're good at what they do.
Yeah. What's your sell methodology? I don't know. Still working on that.
I haven't figured it out.
That's right. That was, like, a real human moment that I really enjoyed listening to. I was like, all right, cool. Charlie and I are as confused by some of this stuff.
Yeah, I was happy to hear that he hasn't figured it out either, because I don't think that anybody's figured it out. I think the people who've done the best are NeverSell. I don't know if that's always the case, but it certainly feels like that's the case now. I think that, you know, at the bottom of a bear market, you kick yourself because you didn't sell some stuff. But
yeah, there's got to be some survivorship bias into that idea as well. I mean, how many people held something all the way down to, we don't hear from them.
This is why I love David Gardner, man. I think he's the true OG of like NeverSell, and I think he's actually built for it. I don't know how many people are actually built for it.
Well, the way you can do it is just by having smaller positions and then just not worrying about it. Just don't check them.
Yeah, I think he adds to the winners too. So, and you know, he just kind of lets the small ones die in nothing. And then if they get a pop, he's happy. It's crazy. It's not crazy. What's crazy is how simple the strategy is, how hard it is to actually execute, and how good the results have actually been. That's wild.
The real OGs are the robber barons and their entrepreneurial ownership of a few businesses that they never sold.
Yeah.
That's a earlier case study probably that would be helpful, thinking about your empire.
That's fair.
Berkshire.
Rockefeller, Carnegie.
Yeah. Berkshire.
Vanderbilt. Berkshire.
Did you guys see the Tom Gaynor interview?
I
thought that one was pretty good.
I haven't.
Yeah, it was good. I liked
it. When did that come out?
Sunday on that Good Investing podcast. That guy gets some good guests. He does some good stuff. But I enjoyed listening to Gaynor. I thought that was a good interview if people are interested in how Markel thinks.
What do you think about the interest rate spike? The 10-year's been kind of running up. It was off a little bit today, but it was through 1.6 yesterday, I think. It's still like on a historical basis, it's still squashed. I think the long run average is about 6%. So the low last year was like 50 bips. Yeah, that's at 1.6. So, and it's still nowhere near. I think it was like 3 before it got squashed through the pandemic last year. So there's been some argument that that's the cause of all of the value getting so beaten up. But then, you know, Cliff Asness had a look at it, couldn't sort of, Cliff Asness's crew couldn't find any correlation. But it does seem to me that it sort of loosely tracks that as it runs up, value seems to run up. And when it runs backwards, value seems to run backwards. So like just eyeballing the chart, it looks like is a reasonable association to me.
So I mean, value does better in a rising rate environment is what you're saying?
I mean, there's probably some limits around the edges to it, but that does seem to be the case.
Well, I think like the reason that rates are going up is people think that the economy may run hot, right? And I guess also inflation or whatever. So I guess if the reason that rates are going up is because people think that velocity is going to like of the money supply, right, is gonna pick up. I could see how value, which probably tends to pick up more cyclical names, would catch a bid in that environment. If that's actually what's going on.
Is the idea that like it's hard to fail then in a that sort of environment? So your shitco doesn't, it's like you take bankruptcy risk out for your cyclical shitco and then it does better then?
I just think it outperforms, right? You get operating leverage through an industrial and you get margin expansion and I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see that. But I don't really know what the composite of value is. I don't know what the companies are that make up the bottom decile or however it's all broken
it's
out.
Energy and finance at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, finance, you know, you would think your loan loss reserves improve if the economy gets better. Energy is going to get more usage, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know how much of this is related to, I mean, banks are particularly sensitive to interest rates, I guess, but I have no idea. Like they want to spread. That's all they need rather than a directional bet, right?
Yeah.
The rising rates, like I looked at the 10-year before we came on. The 10-year's off a little bit today, not much, but you know, it's been very strong, very consistently for the last month or so, and that's sort of coincided with a little run in value, and then it backed off today, and all of a sudden, you know, tech's come back to life, and value's looking a little bit softer today.
Well, it does make sense why tech would do well if rates go down. I mean, that makes sense to me. Now, like
duration.
Why Peloton is up 14%. That seems a little aggressive to just call it a rate issue.
It's wild that it's so pervasive across all of those names. Like I, you know, ARK's up a huge amount. Tesla stuff, and I guess that ARK's got a holding in Tesla, so that's how that happens. But then there's, you know, all of those things are up a lot today.
Yeah. I mean, 14%, that's, again, that's like over $3 billion. It's almost $5 billion. That used to be a fair amount of money.
Used to be, yeah. Marginal trades to get that up, though. What do you think went through? I don't know off the top of my head, but it's just...
I'd be interested to see how many dollars flowed through that security today.
A lot of those names trade an enormous amount. It's astonishing how much gets through Tesla on a daily basis. My God. It's like it trades more than SPY some days.
Yeah, it's obscene. I mean, when it was really ripping there, it was more than 10% of the company shares were turning over every single day. That's a lot.
Yeah, I hope it continues. If momentum on the up and momentum on the down is the new norm, you know, you could get some rubber bands that unwind, present some nice opportunities.
Do you think Tepper and Kathy Wood doing the rounds on the financial news networks helped or did anything? Is that the reason?
Yeah, I think people listen to Tepper. I think people listen to Tepper.
I mean, Tepper's got the famous balls to the wall. I don't know exactly when that was, but that was like 2000, close to the bottom in 2009, right?
Yeah, I mean, Kathy Wood is a bit interesting. I saw Kubiko, or I think that's how you say his name on the Twitter machine. He said like, oh yeah, everything's fine. That's why she's got a big PR tour tomorrow. Which, I mean, if you just like think about it for a second, it's not too hard to figure out that she's coming to put out some flames. That's what you would do if you were her.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't not do it. That's insane to just like be that media friendly and then put your head in the sand today. Like that's not the game.
I mean, it worked.
Especially if you got to unload some shares to.
It was a good call.
Yeah.
All right, folks, hit us with your questions. Yeah, we're at that time. Yeah, Tesla's up $100 billion today.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a solid move.
I mean, shit, $100 billion is like really a lot.
How many billions is that?
Adjusted for inflation?
That's crazy. Yo, shout out to the people sending ideas. Thank you.
I saw a question earlier about cash secured puts. I don't mind it as a strategy. You know, none of this is investment advice. Puts are, you can really blow yourself up on puts, but cash secured puts to a size that makes sense if you were, you sell them out of the money at a price that you want to buy a stock, and you get a little bit of premium for doing that. And then if you get hit, then you've got the advantage of buying that stock where you wanted to buy it and getting the premium as well. So you bought it a little bit cheaper than you were otherwise going to do it. And you got some cash in the door for the period that you, before your put runs out. I like it as a strategy. It's not very tax efficient. You pay a lot of tax on the premium when it comes in the door, but it does mean that you can time a little bit. You can move it in, you can move when it's when the strike is into this year or next year, depending on what you're trying to achieve. So I don't mind it as a strategy. I have done it in the past and I would do it again in the future. I don't do it in the current things that I do because they're equity only, but I like it as a strategy.
I guess the thing about the puts is when I have employed it in my own self, I do hear Buffett in my ear being like, you know, it's a lot more important to be right on the business than to be, you know, right on the next 10 cents of the move or whatever, right? So I sometimes wonder if I get a little bit cute when I enter the options world, then I just should go ahead and be long or not be in it.
I think if you've got nothing else to do, right, and you just sort of, and there's some stuff that you would buy, it's just a long way out, you just do that.
But dude, there's an opportunity cost to that capital, right? Because when the world crashes, you're going to incur that obligation. So is that the place that you really want to put your cash if that's the scenario that you're looking for? Like, it makes sense. I just don't know that I like it for me.
Well, we'll turn it around then. It's like a behavioral thing that forces you to buy at that price.
Yeah.
And so you got to think to yourself, if in a scenario where this market goes down 20 or 50%, what would I want to do in that scenario? And then you go through and you make your list and you go and sell, you know, puts where it makes sense. And
that's an interesting thought. You use it as like a forcing function.
Yeah, that's how I have used it in the past. I've never been hit on anything, but I've pocketed the premium. The problem is when I know some people who do it quite a lot. I think the problem is that when you actually do get hit on that stuff, the problem is when it goes down and you don't get hit, and in many instances you should have just bought the equity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I kind of like. I don't know. Every time that I messed with options, I feel like I probably should have just kept it a little simple. I probably, instead of trimming Disney, should have sold some calls today. That is maybe something that I should have done instead. You bring it in cash instead of paying, like incurring a tax obligation, and you sort of like are deferring it. And if you're okay selling here, then you should be okay selling higher. Like that I kind of get.
Do I think the current move in value is a value run or a junk run? Yeah, I think it's a little bit more. It's three things. It's small, cheap junk that is running at the moment. And to the extent that that touches value, it seems to. But there's also this, I don't know if this is a little bit too inside baseball, but there's like a negative momentum element to this as well. For whatever reason, momentum's just inverted itself recently. And so a lot of these things that were sold off have like rallied pretty hard. And that's something that Michael Green has been talking about. I actually think he's right on that. It is more negative momentum than value.
I mean, the other thing is, I'm not sure the junk hasn't been priced really high lately. Like, there's a lot of junk out there that's caught in a nice bid. Thankfully, some of the people that manage it are outperforming the index by 56%. So that's good. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Sorry, I was trying to find the next question.
What a thread.
What happened?
Boy.
Oh, dude, just absurdity. Just
so,
tell me,
Toby, if you put up a 3.2% return,
and
the index did a 2%, would you say that you were 56% outperformance?
Also, wasn't it negative 2% if I read the thread properly?
It doesn't matter. It's just using percentages in a inappropriate way.
It was awesome.
That was funny.
It was fantastic.
That was funny. But
everyone was pretty merciless on that in Twitter, weren't they? I mean, they just went to town on that one.
I think I say his name, Jim Paletta. I love that guy. That guy cracks me up. Although he's come over the top on me in a couple tweets, and I've had to hit him in his DMs to just sort of smooth the. I've been like, Jim, that's not what I was trying to say, man. But he's a good guy. He came over the top hard on that one.
There were some good questions in here. They've just sort of all scrolled past me. Sorry, sir. I missed them. Inflation. I saw something about inflation. I think that last time I looked, which was a few weeks ago, the market looked like it had been, you know, pricing in like the highest inflation we've seen in a little bit of time. I don't know if that's, you know, what the market expects to happen and what is actually happening under the hood are two different things, but it does seem to be, it's showing up in stuff like housing has gone absolutely bananas. And then anything that's housing related has gone bananas too. So lumber's gone nuts too, right? Have you followed
that? I think this is all supply chain, man. You're on the back of a ton of tariffs and one of the biggest global supply chain shocks ever. So the idea that like maybe policy and COVID took 9 months to materialize is like not that unfathomable to me, right? You got to start all these things again. Like these are high operating leverage businesses and a lot of them just stopped.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, shit's fucked up and that's a technical term. But like, I think that the question is it transitory or is it here to stay? And I think that's the hard stuff. And I my gut says it's transitory. And I know that people don't want to hear it because all the money printing, but that's how I'd lay the bet. I think all the money printing is making everybody have a motivated conclusion rather than think through what's really going on. And I will tell you that I've talked to a couple people that are in supply chain, and it is like really messed up. And I guess part of the problem too is I guess like some of the PPE and some of the vaccines coming through the ports and whatever, like it's not good. I wouldn't expect it to go away either. I think supply chain, this story is going to be here all year.
Well, if you think about reconfiguring a global supply chain in a more nationalistic, isolationist kind of world, which may or may not be what we're leaning a little bit more towards. At least having some critical things that you, as a sovereign nation, have to be able to get your hands on whenever you really want it. Of course, that's probably going to be more expensive. It's going to take time to get up and running. It's going to be a painful, messy process to reconfigure the world like that. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of Hail Marys, all of which is, or not Hail Marys, but you need Hail Marys to get to an easy, clean outcome. But all of which should make you say, boy, a lot of uncertainty out there with that kind of thing. We should probably be paying a lower price for that uncertainty.
You're not going to get your wish. Secondly, I think I think that the other thing, like the part of the chess game that I really don't understand, is we're fresh off 4 years of being hard on China. Asia has done a whole lot better with COVID than the Western world. Like, is it possible that they're kind of screwing us on supply chain to get back? Like, I don't know. That's not an unfathomable geopolitical game to me. I don't think Toyota has a ton of problems getting the chips, and Ford and GM seem to. I think some of that was a sourcing issue, but I think there's stuff going on behind the scenes that people may not fully understand, myself included.
Put me on that list twice.
Yeah, I'm one of those people too. The Ben at Epsilon Theory had some charts a few days ago where he was showing house prices relative to rents across all of these major metros, and it, like, every single chart looks exactly the same. House prices have just gone vertical, and rents have fallen off a cliff. How does something like that?
Is that if you're paying the rent?
I couldn't figure out whether that was like asking price, whether that was like whatever they call it, actual rent, whatever that is. But either way, it seems to be saying that the people who pay rent are in some, you know, are paying less rent, or willing to pay less rent, or they can't ask for as much rent, however that market resolves itself. But that housing's gone absolutely vertical. Like, the divergence is kind of incredible. I just don't know how that resolves itself. I don't know why there's a divergence like that, or how it resolves itself. Any bids on that?
I think there's a lot of people that are stupid right now.
Which way? Buying houses?
Every way. I think that, like, people are still living in the middle of a pandemic, and I think that, like, there's a lot of social proof, and house prices start ripping and interest rates are low, and then you've got families that are talking about, well, we're not going to be able to afford something, and, like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of stupidity right now. I think people should slow down generally.
So if you go back to I think it was the 2007 Berkshire meeting, and Buffett's talking about the housing bubble. And he's saying that houses should trade based on some rough number. And I think he said, I want to say 10 times, but I might be off on that, the average income for that zip code, that area. That's what supports a housing price. That's the fundamental to probably key off of for how much. So if the average person in that neighborhood earns X, then you should maybe be willing to pay up to 10X for that house.
Well,
and we had been up to, like, I don't know, it was like 30X or something insane at that point. I'm directionally correct and probably off specific numbers. But so if you think about reconfiguring our entire kind of labor force in a way where people want more space, they don't want to be in a city as much, and they don't have to earn that city wage, it kind of makes sense to me then that the suburbs and other, like, outside of major cities would be bid up, because you have a better supported average income potentially for that area. Now, whether that's been taken too far is another question, but there is some kind of kernel of logic to that.
I just pulled up before I came on, I just pulled up for my area, and, like, everything's under contract. Everything that's listed on Zillow is under contract, or virtually everything listed on Zillow is under contract. People are aggressive at the moment. Like, the stuff, it's been on for 5 days, it's under contract, which is, you know.
My mom's in Arizona, man. She's having to knock on doors of unlisted homes, and she's losing bids on some of them. There's nuts stuff going on. People do need to take a chill pill.
What is it? Is it just that there's not that much? There's not much inventory out there, because who wants to move and show their house in the middle of a pandemic, right? You're only doing that if you've got to move for work or for some other reason, or you just have to get out of the city, I guess.
Yeah, and two, like, I mean, I'm talking about building this thing. I'm not in a real hurry. Like, with all the raw material prices where they are, I mean, I got to fade the rent while I'm, you know, not, or while I'm not building, so it can't go on in perpetuity. But I'd like to wait till, you know, Q2, Q3 to see how it all settles.
Do you think it's resolved by then? Like, I thought I saw
probably
that,
not. I'm probably just going to get screwed.
I thought that lumber, the move in lumber had been like an 8x move or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nuts. I don't know that it was 8x. I know it tripled tripled in Q3, I think. Right? Or maybe it was...
I think so. Yeah. I think I saw someone saying from this time last year to this time this year. I think that was the move.
Oh, well, that makes sense. But nobody really was buying lumber in March.
That probably makes sense too, yeah.
So you're low ticket.
They might have done that, yeah. I think to be fair, I looked at the housing...
You shark crime loser. I called you out in 2 seconds.
I think that the same thing might have happened with those house prices. Because I think that they based it to 2012, which I think was like... There was a bottom in 2010, then there was a bottom in 2012. And since then, it's been like a vertical run.
Yeah.
What if this was all... the market front running the housing market front running student loan debt jubilee?
Could you imagine? Very smart.
Market might be smarter than all of us put together.
Well, then you got to pay high prices.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you kind of have to unanchor maybe the original fundamental there if you're going to allow debt to completely disappear.
All right, amigos, that's full time. That was fun. We'll see everybody next week. Last words, fellas?
I had a reasonable amount of enjoyment out of this. Thank you, guys.
Cheers. Shake it up, stop when the clock hits 13. Sing 1, 2, 3, 4. Cause no one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it. Cause no one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it.